short ball, flapping moose back and full scarcely past square leg. So this is cricket.
Victory to the Australians by 8 wickets.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Schnoo. We're back yet again for the third innings.
Back by popular demand.
Yeah, the doors have been hammered down. We've had to batten down the hatches. We've had that many positive rave reviews and demands for more cricket talk. I wish that was true, but the numbers are good, so we can't really complain too much. As I said, back for episode 3. Good evening. It's a very warm welcome to my co-host, Schnoo. How are you this evening?
Good, thanks, man. Enjoying the warm Canberra, I suppose, spring-summer weather and the thunderstorm. So,
got a thunderstorm. Nice. I'm praying for a thunderstorm. Western Sydney is just baking. I've been inside with the aircon and I've got a fan on. I've got the aircon cranking and desperate to go for a little dip in the pool very shortly, I think, because it's struggle street at the moment. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk a little bit about cricket. We've had two ODIs down in the Chappell Hadley series. We've got one to come.
Got our hands back on the trophy.
The series is over. Yeah, the trophy's back. Back to winning ways. Everything's normal. The world is right again. And Australia are winning series at home.
Yeah, order has been restored to the universe. What more can I say? We very rarely lose one day is after we score 300 runs. And when we score over 350, I don't think I think only one game, that infamous game in South Africa, where we scored 440, is probably the only one that comes to mind that lost after scoring 350 plus.
Look, it doesn't happen often, but I mean, 378 over the course of 50 overs, really set down by a strong platform. Davey Warner, 119 off 115 balls. Aaron Finch sort of hung around for a little bit, 19 off 34, didn't contribute too much. Yep. Steve Smith, 72 off 76. Travis Head with another half century. In fine form. Matty Wade, not too much of a contribution with 11 from 5. George Bailey, not out none from 1 delivery, but a bit of the talk of the town. The man who finished it all with a flurry, Mitch Marsh, 76 off 40 deliveries. Now, he's certainly one of the more maligned characters in this Australian squad over the last period of time, which is probably a little bit of an understatement. But
yeah, to put it lightly.
But does this sort of get him back in the good graces a bit, or is it... Oh, okay, well, that's one innings. Let's take it easy.
Yeah, that's one innings after, you know, what he came in when the score was, 300 and something. I think I'd love to, head out to face the last 15 overs when we've already got 300 on the board in a one day. But that said, he did, you know, 2 fours, 7 sixes, 190 strike rate. Can't complain. You know, he didn't start off that well. Had a couple of problems with his bat. Wanted to change things around and then, you know, really started cracking him.
Yeah, and I mean, there was some crisp hits. I mean, some of that hitting at the death there, the period there where he hit 3 sixes in a row. Certainly some clean hitting at the very least.
Very much so. You really got to wonder just how much practice these guys put in to... clear the boundary with such ease. You know, it's not just net practice for these guys. They're out in the middle and practicing clearing the ropes by big margins.
Just don't mention the size of the bats or you'll have Mark Taylor up in arms because...
I think he's jealous. Like,
oh, surely, he must be.
He's just wondering, where were these when I was, you know, 18, 19, you know...
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, if you roll back to the clock when he was in his prime, you'd have guys like Don Bradman going, gee, I wish we had bats as good as this.
Oh, of course. And I suppose that's, you know, intergenerational envy, but, you know, it's bound to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things. It's just he cannot hide from his sort of his almost jealousy. He's got it
it's
out
visible.
There.
Visible.
Oh yeah, a palpable tension on the commentary box. But the Kiwis put up a bit of a brave fight. Always hard when you're chasing 370 plus. Martin Guptill 45, Kane Williamson 81, Jimmy Neesham 74. There was a period there where the Williamson-Neesham partnership was starting to build, where there was a tiny glimmer, I suppose, that the Kiwis might do it. But ultimately, they were too slow during that period, and they were pretty much going at half the required run rate. Mm. So they were always going to leave themselves a lot to do. And then once those two guys were gone, it was good night nurse, really, from there.
Yeah. Especially without Guptill scoring at least, 80-odd, there was very little hope for them to, have that big last 10 overs and score 100-plus. And as you were saying, Williamson and Neesham had a good partnership, but didn't really, tick over the strike and really put pressure on the Australian bowling and fielding. And I think, the fact that Travis Head bowled 7 overs for 31, a guy who doesn't really turn the ball, doesn't really do that much, isn't quick, doesn't have changes of pace or anything, the fact they could only get 31 off his 7 overs and only hit 1-4 off him, I think that's, case in point. And it was good to see James Faulkner back.
Yeah, well, he's your guy.
Yeah.
You're a Jimmy Faulkner man.
I'm very much on the Jimmy Faulkner bandwagon. If only he was born in Victoria, I would have an actual reason to support him. But I actually do love watching him play, especially watching him bat.
Well, Tasmania's kind of like a...
Victoria Park too, yeah.
Better say, it's like a sublet of Victoria, I suppose. Yeah. Almost. They'll love that. Any Tasmanian listeners, they'll love that. I actually love Tasmania, a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
but a fine performance overall. As we said.
I like how you hedge that. If you get an insult with them, just insult them.
Well, no, see, I do like insulting them, but I do genuinely like Hobart. Hobart is one of the best cities I've ever been to, especially on a cricket trip. We went down there for a phenomenal cricket trip and cannot recommend it enough if you get a chance to get down to Belrive. It's well worth it from the little chicken takeaway shop just around the corner called Legs and Breasts. Which really caught our fancy across to the Customs House Hotel. You tell them Rory the Scotsman sent you to the Customs House Hotel. I'm sure they haven't forgotten him, so this is about 4 years on. But we better roll on. We've got one more ODI in this series tomorrow.
Yep.
At the MCG. More of the same?
Yep. I'm hoping if New Zealand win the toss, they'll actually bat. Because... would be nice to see Australia bowl with a bit of pressure on them and see what they do with a run chase. I think that game in Canberra on Tuesday when Williamson won the toss and elected to bowl, I don't know what exactly it was he saw in the pitch or if it was the deceptive cloud cover that didn't actually help the ball swing that fooled him into... electing to bowl first. So it would be nice to see them bat and post a big score.
Yeah, absolutely. Or alternatively, I'd like to see Australia bat first and score 350 plus and roll them cheap.
So more of the same. Okay.
More of the same for me, yeah. Once you're onto a winner, I'm happy just to roll with it.
Yeah.
But so that'll be fantastic. Obviously not too much point talking about it. By the time the show is out, it'll be up tonight and out tomorrow. Have a little bit of time, but most of our listeners will probably come post that. So we'll roll on. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about Glenn Maxwell. You've put in the running order notes, misunderstood genius or spoilt brat. Where do you lie on that?
Mate, I wrote down the question. You should answer it.
I'm happy to answer it. He's a spoilt brat. I'm not going to hedge my bets on Glenn Maxwell. I'll hedge my bets for the state of Tasmania. I will not hedge my bets for Glenn Maxwell.
Even if he was to become a New South Welshman?
Yeah, come on up. I mean, we've had Shane Watson. many times, and I put up with him. I even pretended to like him when he helped the Thunder win a BBL title last year. Almost briefly forgiven. but what a way to carry on.
Yeah.
Come out. And I mean, I've been critical of Matthew Wade as a batsman over the years, but to come out and say, I should be ahead of this guy, and I should be doing this, and I should be doing that, and throw the toys out of the pram, get over yourself.
Yeah.
He has the ability and the talent to take away games from people. He also has the ability to just completely throw away his wicket and have minimal impact. So you're not the superstar that you think you are. He's not on the cusp of Test cricket. I don't think we're in that sort of shape where someone like Glenn Maxwell's back in the frame for Test cricket.
Mm.
Got the three Tests under his belt, the highest score of 37 with an average of 13.3 with a bat, an average of 38.7 with the ball in those three Tests. So small sample size, but no thanks.
Do you think he's one of those guys who will come back stronger from the, this kind of discipline, or is he one of those guys that you almost have to indulge and say, look, he's so good that he can win us games that we have to almost give him a little bit extra, license to get away with a few things?
I think his personality is certainly the latter, but I don't know whether his ability warrants it. I genuinely don't. As I said, on his day, at his best, he is a phenomenal limited overs cricketer. But he has far too often does he can let a game pass him by. He can throw away a wicket with at very poor times.
Yeah,
it's very very much. I almost think of him as a luxury player.
Sure.
If he was to come out in that similar situation as Mitch Marsh at 4 for 300, you'd back him to do the same and hit 50, 60, 70 runs. But if he's coming out at 4 for 30 in the ninth over, you'd back him to be the fifth wicket pretty quickly.
He's never really showed the grit for Test cricket.
No, I think that's a good way of saying it. I sort of try and steer clear of it sometimes because it does sort of seem a bit cliched, but I think in this case it's very accurate. I don't think he shows enough fight. I think one of his biggest things, particularly with the bat, is a lack of understanding of the game situation.
Mm.
And sometimes it's something you can probably level at David Warner as well, and you'll say when he gets out playing a silly shot, when you're under pressure, you'll get out and, well, that's the way he plays. But sometimes you can't say that.
Yeah.
So, the way you play has to be adaptable to the conditions of the game that you're playing in.
Mm, of course.
I'm at the point with Glenn Maxwell where, mate, if you're becoming more trouble than you're worth, then don't let the door hit you on the way out, mate.
If we didn't have David Warner, would the risk that we are willing to take on David Warner, would we be more willing to take it on Glenn Maxwell? So if we had, two stable openers, Renshaw and Khawaja, for say, would we be more willing to have, a Maverick match winner batting at six?
Yeah, I think particularly in Test cricket, that's probably a big factor in that you have to look and look at the balance of the squad and the balance of the temperaments that you've got in the squad, less so in the limited overs format where you probably can afford to put more of those guys into a side and expect that results will still go okay. So I think from a Test perspective, yeah, I think you're onto something there for sure.
Yeah, I think he does have to either show, that point that Darren Lehman made about, it's been about 2 years since he's made a big 100. He has to either do it for Victoria or go over to county cricket and just have like a 1,000-run summer and really knock the door down.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's one of those things you need to consistently prove over at first-class level that he can deliver runs. And if he wants to get by in an all-round capacity, he needs to consistently prove that he can take wickets and bowl at that level as well. Otherwise, you can almost fall into that Cam White role where, as his career progressed, his bowling sort of became less and less of a factor, and he certainly became a more predominant batsman. So you can sort of start going down that route if you don't produce with ball in hand as well. But look,
a route that Steve Smith seems to be certainly following down the path of.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, I'm glad you bring Steve Smith up. He's the next guy I want to touch on. He's again strong performances across the the two ODIs, a big 100 in the first game and 70-odd in the second. He's stood up as a leader, yeah?
Yep. Really, you know, just as you were saying about Maxwell there, about knowing what's needed when you come out to bat, Steve Smith, you know, really dug in and batted for a long, long time in that first game. And then, you know, when things were going somewhat easier in the second one, he's really learnt, well, he really timed his acceleration really nicely and realised that once Travis Head was going pretty comfortably as well, that he could really go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a guy now who averages over 57 with the bat at test level, 43 in ODIs, 21 in T20s at an international level, which is not a bad clip
yep.
at that level when you consider you quite often you are going to be throwing your wicket away
yep.
Prior to that. And as you said, certainly not the contributor with the ball that he was touted. I mean, there was a point where he was the next Shane Warne and who could bat a bit.
Mm.
And now he's one of the very best batsmen in the world. And still only 27.
Yeah.
Born literally 7 days before me in the same year. A week apart.
Nice, yeah. So, I was like that with Phil Hughes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. I suppose, I mean, it's one of those things bound to happen. But, you know, me and the Australian Test captain, very tight now, I suppose.
Yeah.
Probably going to be best friends based on that assumption. He's phenomenal. He has the ability, well and truly, to take games away from opposition. And as you said, the way that he can adapt his innings to the requirements of the side is amazing. He can come out in that first game and absolutely blast that big 100 and work with a run of partners, with a string of partners to get to that point. Or, like you said last, for the second ODI, he almost works as a bit of a bridge between David Warner, Travis Head, and then down to Mitchell Marsh, where he kept those runs flowing in between once Warner departed and obviously allowed other guys to come in, set themselves and start to score runs. So
he was the difference, really. Like, if you compare the innings of Steve Smith and Kane Williamson, that was the big difference between the two, is that Williamson kind of hit the bad balls for four, which both of them did, but the good balls he would only be hitting to the deep fielders for a single, and hitting them hard, hitting them quite firm to the fielders, whereas Smith was willing to take pace off the ball, put it either 5 or 10 metres either side, and run twos to make sure that they were getting eight off and over, even if they're not hitting a boundary. And that ability with the bat is the difference between scoring 380 and scoring 270 in a chase.
Absolutely, and I think it's underrated, the ability to continually turn over and score runs.
Mm.
It particularly in 50 over cricket, where it is sort of, it's become that almost middle ground between T20 and Test cricket, where sometimes you'll see players going mental, sometimes you'll see the building of an innings, and you sort of get that mix of styles and that mix of approaches to how teams want to approach the game. To be able to, even through those quiet periods, to go at 5, 6 and over and continually turn the strike over, turn the runs and not lose too many wickets, gets you to a point where you can accelerate. I mean, I think it was 126 runs scored in the last 10 overs in that second ODI, which, I mean, if you can go for a period of 10 overs at 12 and over, you're going to take the game away from just about any bowling attack in the world at that level. So it certainly gets you to the point where it's a phenomenally well-structured side, and it's the approach that they took to the game has certainly been of the highest quality. So a good win, and certainly looking forward to more of the same tomorrow. If we just touch on domestic front for a moment, we've had two Sheffield Shield games have now wrapped up, and I'm waiting for the screen to load. Western Australia with an 8-wicket win over the Queensland Bulls. WA Queensland, I should say, batted first, 353. Matty Renshaw, 38. The Aussie, 150 from Usman Khawaja, 157 for 281 balls. With the ball for the West Australians, Steve Macken, 5 for 68. Certainly the pick. WA, all out for 265 in reply, with really only Ashton Turner's 100, the notable fight. But they rolled the Queenslanders for 138 in the second dig. Only Uzi again, Khawaja 61. And WA, 2 for 227. 113 not out for Jono Wells. 78 not out for Adam Voges. A big win for the West Aussie boys.
Yeah, that's actually really impressive. What do you think about Khawaja not playing in the one-day side?
I think he's one of those guys. I don't mind him staying in long-form cricket mode. I don't mind him. I think I would have preferred this for David Warner as well, but for marketing reasons, obviously Australia are never going to leave David Warner out of an ODI side at home. But I don't mind him just going back to the grind. Obviously, as I said, scored that big 100 in the first innings at strike rate of 55, tick under 56, actually. Just to stay in that mode, churn out score runs, and really the only Queenslander put up a fight in the second dig as well with 61 off 80 balls.
That's so, what, 210 for the game?
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
Pretty content with that. Do you have any specific thoughts? Any issues with it? Or?
I wouldn't mind actually seeing him back in the one-day side once the test series against Pakistan's over. But I suppose, yeah, like, in terms of making a concerted effort to protect the test batsmen, it leaves Renshaw, it leaves Khawaja, Maddison and Hanscom all playing long form cricket. And in terms of a strategic call, I think that's actually quite smart. I'm still a bit, I would say, puzzled or annoyed that Western Australia's, what's his name, the batsman, the lefty, still not scoring runs.
Cam Bancroft.
Yeah, Bancroft.
Yeah, he seems to have found an almighty slump at the moment.
Yeah. He's almost doing a mid-90s Michael Hussey on the verge of the Australian team and then, a massive form slump.
Let's hope he has the comeback of a Mike Hussey as well.
Yeah, he's gonna need it to try and push his way back into the side.
Jumping on to the other game that's completed, New South Wales with a 2-wicket loss to the Redbacks down in South Australia, which bitterly disappointing. The Blues batting first, all out for 269. And I was copping quite a bit of grief from the South Australian commentators. I had a little bit of Twitter beef going on, all in good fun, of course. But copping a little grief as the Blues wickets fell, and then very quickly the South Australians followed, all out for 236. Raphael 61, and Tommy Cooper's 34. The only real fights. The Blues, Nathan Lyon took 3 for 63, and young fella Stobo took 3 for 69. I've literally never heard of him before in my life. So, Charlie Stobo, yeah, he's gotten through the net on that one. Can't say I've ever heard of young Charlie, but took 3 for 69 from 23 overs. So things looking pretty good for the Blues. First innings lead, but rattled for 87, 45 from the People's Champion Ed Cowan, and 25 from Ryan Carter's. Pretty much it. Ducks to Dan Hughes, Nick Maddison, Gibson, Nathan Lyon, and my man Charlie Stobo. So the Blues all out for 87, and South Australia held on 8 for 121 to chase them down. So a pretty disappointing defeat for the Blues in reality. Should pretty much expect to beat South Australia with or without our Australian players, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it doesn't really help Victoria either. Like, seriously, the one thing we ask of you guys is to beat our nearest rivals, and you can't even do that.
Well, that's you've just sort of cheered me up just a little bit, in that at the very least, it's hurt Victoria. So that's something at least. And you guys are on at the moment. What, trailing Tassie by 41 runs with 2 wickets in hand.
Yeah, and probably not that long to play either, because they're playing in Hobart day night. Another 5 overs. They're really going to need to go hard or go home, as the old saying goes. But we've got the...
Who's at the crease at the moment?
We've got Dan Christian and John Holland. So Dan Christian will have to score about 38 of the required 42.
Is John Hastings injured? If he's coming in below Holland, he must be unfit, surely.
I'm not sure.
Because as much as I love Dutchie, he's about as helpful as a fence post with a bat in his hand.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very much an old school bowler.
He's a bunny.
Yeah. Hastings is coming in at 11. I'm not too sure what's wrong with him. Batting so low.
It'd be worth checking out that, because, I mean, he's a guy who can certainly handle himself with a bat. You'd have him in before Boland or Tremaine at the very least as well. Yeah. So that's a bit of an interesting one, but that'll obviously wrap up, as you said, pretty shortly.
Yeah, they've just caught a rain delay, so I'm pretty sure that's done.
That'll do it then. That'll be a draw down there. Yeah. So that's going to be interesting for you guys now. You were 4 from 4. Coming into this one on top of the ladder, and Tasmania were at the very bottom with just the one win.
Yep. So we're now South 4.5 up in second.
Yeah, so South Australia is still obviously on top. South Australia with the 3 wins in second. Queensland, the Blues with the 2 wins. And WA and Tassie will be one, and as you said, 1.5 there for the Tigers, who have certainly struggled at the moment as well. So it's a bit of a topsy-turvy looking table at the moment. But as you said, that certainly won't help you guys. But can't complain too much, I suppose, being at the peak. Look, we'll roll on and have a quick look. I want to talk a little bit about Pat Cummins, obviously back in the lineup. Just while I get it, I have Googled it. The Gordon Cricket Club for Charlie Stobo. So he's a North Shore boy.
Okay.
So he probably plays rugby in the winter. 1,114 runs at a batting average of 18.8, and his current season bowling statistics on My Cricket, very helpful. No runs, no wickets, no bowling figures. So,
interesting.
There you go. But he's got a run for the Blues. So, Charlie Stobo, one for the future. I'll never forget Charlie Stobo now.
Yeah.
He's stuck in my head.
You sure you're pronouncing his name right?
Well, I'm going to have to find out now. I mean, it looks Stobo, S-T-O-B-O.
Yeah.
So I'm confident in calling him Stobo, but it's one of those things I have to keep an eye out because, in a few years' time, we'll be looking back and I'll be saying, I called that kid, had no idea who he was, and look what he's done for me. In much the same way that I was at Aaron O'Brien's one-day domestic debut for New South Wales, I can look back with fond memories. It was also Ed Cowan's debut, funnily enough.
Yeah.
I was there for that. A bitterly disappointing defeat for the Blues at home to Queensland. But Pat Cummins, back in the fold.
The old boy, yeah.
The Penrith boy. Repeatedly pulled out a Summer Panthers contention by Australia. They don't want him representing down at Howell Oval. Mm-hmm. But he's back with plenty of pace.
Oh, man. Like, the fact that he's bowling 145+, with seemingly very little, effort, is frightening. Absolutely frightening.
As you said, he doesn't even look like he's at maximum output.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. Like, I think Hazelwood and Jackson Bird and all those guys are probably quite envious of Cummins's raw pace in the nets and hate to be the guy in the nets when Stark and Cummins go, okay, which of us bowl faster? Because that would just be crazy.
Oh, absolutely. I actually spoke to, and I'll leave his name out to protect the guilty, but I spoke to one of the longtime Panthers boys who happened to face him on the comeback trail the last time he played for Penrith, and he was getting some pretty frightening speeds in the nets. And I said, mate, in all honesty, I said, talk me through it. And he went, look, I'll be honest with you, and I'll bleep this out post. He said, it's fucking scary. He said, I've played Sydney Grey cricket for the last 10 years, and watching this play, facing this bloke is the fucking scariest thing I've ever had to do in my life.
Oh, God. Because guys who bowl that quick in the nets, I probably don't, like, they probably enjoy like scaring the living daylights out of batsmen.
Oh yeah, that's probably the number one joy of being a fast bowler.
Like they could probably like beat you for pace and hit the top of off, probably 9 balls out of 10 if they wanted. But they'd rather, you know, give you a little chin music, tickle the ribs, get you ducking, and then get you out. Oh, yeah. Just for the fun of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It always makes me think, when we were in Hobart, we went and watched the Sri Lankan net session before on the last day before the test started. And in the net right in front of us was Dinesh Chandimal. One of the coaches, was Marvin Attapattu, and sort of had a bit of a look at him going through his paces, and Dinesh Chandimal was there. And in the very far net over was Kumar Sangakkara. And they had these local bowlers as net bowlers. And this guy coming in, he wasn't overly tall, wasn't overly quick. He had the Brett Lee run-up. He was coming from 4 kilometres away. And he continually tried to bounce Kumar Sangakkara.
Oh, God.
And Sanger's just rolling back and swatting. Mm. Rolling back and swatting. And this guy...
Probably
started to pitch a couple
angrier
up.
And angrier.
Yeah, steaming in with a...
Yeah.
And he pitched a couple up, and most of them were sort of just playing nice defensive strokes or cover drives into the net to decent balls. But I think Kumar thought, I'm just going to give you one here, son. And he planted the front foot and lofted him. And I think if it didn't clear 120 metres, I'm not sitting here. He absolutely lofted this bloke back over his head, back over the top of the main gates, and it bounced down on the road and rolled down towards the bridge at Belrive. It's one of the biggest dismissals from a batsman to a bowler I've ever seen. It was like, okay, you've tried, you're nowhere near my level, son. I need to just show you that so you can be quiet.
So if you'd like to start your run-up from a little bit further, start from back there.
Go and grab it. And you can tell that's what he wanted to say. It was just like, this guy, he was trying not to laugh at this guy. Like, it's, yeah. Come on, man, it's Kumar Sangakkara.
Yeah.
He's been bounced by better bowlers than some net bowler from Hobart. But, yeah, mind-boggling. I just want to talk, we did briefly talk about it off-air. Do the Kiwis have an inferiority complex when it comes to Australia?
Going by how much they celebrated that pool stage win in the World Cup, yes.
Because, I mean, they, as you said, they celebrated that like they'd won the World Cup. We then subsequently smashed them in the final.
Yeah.
And no matter what position they get themselves in or where they seem to be in terms of world cricket, they cannot put a consistent performance together against Australia.
Yeah. Even when their lineup is relatively comparable and of, you know, equal form, you know, I won't ever say they're of equal talent. But, you know, even when they're coming in off, you know, 5 or 6 wins on the trot, playing against Australia does seem to bring out the worst in them.
It seems to take them away from what they do well.
Yeah.
They'll do things well. As you said, they've had a good win against Pakistan. They'll get themselves into a good groove, some decent form. And then 2 minutes in against Australia, it's like, okay, it's not working. Plan B, plan C, plan D. And then it's very much the game's taken away from them again.
And the things they do really well seem to fall apart. Like, you know, fielding, catching, not bowling no balls, not bowling wides. And then even when they do bowl a bad no ball or a wide, you know, following it up with a quality ball in response. I think Channel...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Channel 9 put up a... frightening stat of just how many runs they'd given the Aussies just off the free hits. And I think it was excess of like 45 in 2 games.
I always come back, and it's on YouTube, and I've sat down and watched it quite a few times. The 2005 third ODI, Daryl Tuffy's over where he came into Adam Gilchrist and went for about 20-odd runs, and it was wides and no balls. And some of the worst bowling you've ever seen. I mean, Daryl Tuffy was you know, a decent standard one-day cricketer and just seemed to completely capitulate and melt bowling to Adam Gilchrist, bowling to the Australians. So I think it's yeah, at this point in time, the Kiwis, it can only be described as an inferiority complex to me.
Yeah, I think they realise... Because it's not even like stage fright. Like, you would think, okay, look, I'm in front of 100,000 people at Eden Gardens taking on India, would probably be more of a confronting stage than coming over and playing at Manuka Oval in front of 8,500 people plus 200 or 300 New Zealand fans. But yeah, just playing against the Aussies seems to rattle them.
Yeah, and I mean, long may it continue, because I like beating New Zealand in anything, but yeah, it's just one of those things worth pointing out.
And the thing is, I think it's going to continue. I think it was Monday when Cricket Australia announced that Chappell Hadley series would be occurring with more frequency. So it's been about 5 years since we've had just the Chappell Hadley series kind of, you know, separate by itself without a test series to go along with it, like we're having this year. But there's going to be an increase in frequency of the Chappell Hadley ODI rivalry. All, you know, crammed 3 games in a week. And it's going to be starting next February, and then every year after that for the foreseeable future. So, you know, I think our one-day domination of the Kiwis will continue for the foreseeable future.
Well, let's hope. Just looking briefly forward on a little bit of a different tack, 10th of December, we've got 3 games coming up in the WBBL, the Women's Big Bash League. The Hurricanes against the Scorchers, the Strikers against the Renegades, and the Thunder take on the Stars.
Yep.
You're looking forward to be watching a bit of the WBBL?
I don't know about this weekend, but usually yes. It's actually quite interesting to see, you know, it's not all about 145k back of a length balls that get hit over the fence for six. So it's rare to see chasing teams, you know, being asked to chase more than about 160. But you really do get to see all facets of the game of cricket, you know, make an appearance, and it can be really quite tactical games. So it's a different kind of entertainment, really.
Yeah, it's very much, as you said, it's sort of a big step away from the cricket that we know and that we sort of take for granted with the men's cricket week in, week out. Now, the men's BBL, obviously not going to be too far away either, but this will be a nice little taster, I suppose. Get the women's cricket coming in. They're going to play out across, looks like a lot of them, they're all going to be up here, basically. We've got games at North Sydney Oval, Drummoyne Oval, Lavington Sports Ground in Albury, Aquinas College at Salter Point. So it looks like they're going to do something very similar to the Matador Cup. Yeah. Howell Oval in Penrith on the 16th of December. Thunder Adelaide Strikers, mate, WBBL. There it is.
You should almost, you should commentate that game.
I would be more than happy to. I've had one crack at live sports commentary in the past, and it did end up with a swear word live on air. It wasn't me. I didn't swear.
Sure.
Was that Central West Blouse Cup rugby, and we cut down to the sideline superstar, and he wasn't paying attention, and he's dropped the F-bomb when we've hit him up for some analysis. But BBL, good Lord. I'd almost forgotten about that. The BBL, as you said, not too far away. 20th of December, first game. Sydney Thunder host the Sixers, the Sydney Smash at Spotless Stadium for the defending champions. And isn't that delightful to say, the defending champions, the Sydney Thunder, after years of mediocre oblivion, the champions in men's and women's BBL cricket in Australia, the Thunders. And haven't they? They've strengthened the Thunder. Is there, obviously before then we'll have a bit more of an in-depth preview, but is there any one or two players you're really keen to look out for in the BBL this year? I know it's a question without notice, but
Travis Head, again, I'd say. Travis Head,
is he still with the Strikers?
I think so. Travis Head and Usman Khawaja, because Head is almost doing the opposite of Khawaja. Khawaja's kind of set in the test team. He really should be in the one-day team, and he kind of showed the world that, actually, I can really hit the ball and play like a 2020 player as well. And Travis Head's doing the opposite. So it'll be interesting to see if they can replicate last year's performances, especially that New Year's Eve game. That was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Look, for me, it's always going to be about my favourites at this level. Ben Rohrer. I love watching Ben Rohrer. He's with the Thunder again. Andre Russell, another guy with the Thunder, who obviously had a big impact last year. Looking abroad, I'd like to see Peter Hanscom have a good tournament for the Stars.
Abroad? Mate, we're not that far away.
Well, it feels like it. Have you ever driven from between Sydney and Melbourne?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a long trip. I've done that once, and by the time it was time to come back, I was. It didn't help that the Panthers got smashed by the Melbourne Storm, which was the whole point of our trip, but it felt like another country. And I'm sorry, but you're one of the few Victorians I've been able to tolerate. So.
Oh, I'll keep on your good side there.
Yeah, absolutely. But I would like to see that. And I think the Stars all, they've sort of been there or thereabouts over the BBL without going to the next level. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. Look, we're probably going to have to just about wrap it up for the week. As I said, looking forward, we'll have a bit more of an in-depth preview on the BBL. And we'll wrap up the Chapel Hadley series. It's obviously going to finish tomorrow. And by the time we come out next time, we'll be talking Test cricket in Pakistan. Vish, one thing to look for tomorrow. What's it going to be?
I'm looking forward to see if the selectors, you know, mix and match or change it up, especially with the Test bowlers, Hazelwood, Stark. I don't think, as you said, TV commitments will probably mean that they have to keep Steve Smith and Warner in the side, but. Yeah, it will be interesting to see if they keep Stark and Hazelwood in there and whether or not they play a spinner.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting to see. As you said, probably the spin option is the one thing that's still quite undetermined in the one-day side. So let's see if someone can lay a claim to that. Personally, I want to see Aaron Finch come back and score a few runs. It's been a little while since he scored him at ODI level, and I think he's one of those guys that can be at risk of dropping away from the side and being replaced by someone like an Usman Khawaja if they get back into the side. So I want to see Finchie step up and make sure that he secures his spot over the short term. So that's the one I'll be looking for. And some wickets from Jimmy Faulkner if he plays as well wouldn't go astray. I'm not the big Faulkner fan like yourself, but I am a big fan of his. So I would like to see him do well. So that's going to do it for episode 3 of the Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Stu. Thank you once again for joining us. Check me out on Twitter at Undiluted7. On Facebook, we've got the Facebook page, The Summer of Cricket with Straubs and Stu. On Twitter, Stu, where can our listeners catch you?
Well, at United_Journal for all my thoughts on sport.
Excellent. And you're more than happy to. You haven't learnt this yet, but as you put yourself out there on more and more podcasts, you'll have to get used to the consistent abuse you'll get on Twitter from people who think your opinion is incorrect, despite the fact they continually listen to it every week. So that'll be something you get to look forward to.
Yeah, I've experienced that with a blog. It should be interesting to see if my vocal opinions get. As much abuse.
Oh, believe me, it's the internet. It's the wild west of digital content,
yeah.
As I all know. Another thing to keep out for, just been approached to do some writing for the Real Sport website. I'm going to do a little bit of cricket talk, a little bit of football talk, a little bit of rugby league, and a little bit of gridiron. So I'll plug everything as it comes out when it's down. But we'll go from there. So thank you very much for another week. Enjoy Friday cricket from the MCG tomorrow, and we'll talk again next week.
Goodbye.
Peace out. This podcast proudly recorded and produced by Strawberry Podcast Solutions.